This WBEZ podcast is supported by Invisible Wounds Foundation, committed to healing military members living with brain injuries suffered in service. Thousands of service members are living with traumatic and devastating brain injuries that we can't see. Join the mission by texting DUTY to 53555 to give, or learn more at invisiblewounds.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Mayor Brandon Johnson is back and ready to answer Chicago's questions. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Once a month, Chicago's chief executive, Mayor Brandon Johnson, stops by the WBEZ studios to answer your questions. Questions from Chicagoans like Roberto in Edgewater.
There has been a lot of discussion surrounding the Ernst & Young report, and certain people have implied or suggested that you did not include any of the recommendations or included very little. So my question for you is, what items from the Ernst & Young report was included in your budget, and are there two or three additional items that you would consider to include in your budget?
Today, we talked a little about safety on public transit after a woman was set on fire on a CTA train this week. But for the bulk of the hour, the mayor took questions from me and you on the city's budget woes. The clock's ticking, and his controversial budget plan needs to pass by December 31st. But after the City Council's Finance Committee rejected Johnson's $600 million tax package, negotiations are back to square one. Now, before we jump right into Ask the Mayor, In the Loop executive producer Daniel Tucker is here with me for a quick preview. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Sasha.
Good to see you. You were in the control room, which was kind of a great vantage point, I think, because you got to see all that was happening with myself and Mayor Johnson in the studio, the phone lines, which seemed to be ringing off the hook. And people, I think, were calling for one thing.
Yeah. I mean, people wanted to talk about the budget. They wanted to talk about the corporate head tax. They wanted to make other suggestions on different types of taxes that city council and the mayor could consider. Someone called in to ask, you know, why do we not have a congestion tax like they do in New York City, where you get charged if you go into the central business district? This is something that cities around the world have considered. It can be a little bit hard to pull off. It's unclear how that exactly would work in Chicago.
Right.
We had someone call in to ask, why do we not have more taxes on Amazon, TikTok? The mayor actually wants to do some of that. There could be legal challenges around that piece of his spending plan. People also wanted to call in about what can the city do more to support small business? That's sort of budget adjacent, I guess you would say. But yeah, people calling in on all sorts of topics, but especially things around affordability.
Mm-hmm.
We had quite a few questions about property taxes, even though the mayor was very clear to point out he does not set property taxes. He does not control property taxes in Cook County. But certainly money and people's pocketbooks is on the mind.
Absolutely. And like Roberto, who we just heard from, an EY report was also on folks' minds. Well, what's the story there?
Yeah, so the city and the mayor commissioned a report, and EY, or Ernst & Young, took a look at what are some different options that the mayor and city council could take here. And they came up with a report that gave many, many, many different options of types of taxes that could be considered or types of efficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
EY was saying this: if you put all these different things in place that they recommended, we could be saving hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even as much as $1.4 billion in a year.
Right.
But then critics of the mayor, like Joe Ferguson, the former inspector general, said, hey, of all these different recommendations, you're taking just very few.
Right.
I think that the number that Ferguson used was $12 million, but
That's
the mayor
right.
did say in our conversation that he felt they had taken more than that. In any case, I think it's clear that he did not take all the recommendations, and so there was questions about why not.
I think the mayor thinks he's taken like half the recommendations. I think he said something about 50%. So the numbers may not add up, but we can dig into that another time.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, as you said, lots of sticking points there that not just residents, you know, but city council members want to get cleared up. And this all needs to pass by December 31st, Dan. And time is winding down.
Yeah, I mean, it's November 21st. I guess, you know, the mayor would argue, hey, we still do have, you know, 40 days or so here.
And some holidays in between.
And some holidays in between. You know, traditionally, if you look back 5, 10 years or longer, if you look at the Daley administration and manual, sometimes they were passing a budget much earlier than this. But the mayor points out we still do have time. He's actually soliciting ideas right now from city council about, OK, if you don't like all the ideas in my budget proposal, what do you want to bring to the table?
Right.
So he has created a forum where aldermen, alder people can submit additional ideas because, you know, traditionally in Chicago, the mayor sets the agenda. This is how it had worked for decades. And here's my budget, pass it. There were cases when budgets passed, I believe, unanimously or nearly unanimously for many years. That was not the case last year with Mayor Johnson's budget. He does not see that necessarily as a ding on him. He says, hey, this is how it's supposed to work. You know, I'm supposed
more
to work with city council.
Yeah.
Collaboration. So I leave it to the listeners to decide if they like that old version where the mayor kind of set the agenda or if they're open to this kind of newer version that Mayor Johnson has going, where there is more back and forth between the city council and the mayor.
Yeah, well, let's end this back and forth and get right into the November edition of Ask the Mayor on WBEZ. So let's dig in. Your budget plan, it was voted down by the City Council Finance Committee Monday. A critic, Alderman Ray Lopez, said, once again, you've lost control of the budget process, and he called this defeat embarrassing. Why allow it to come up for a vote if you don't have the votes?
Well, first of all, this budget has been well orchestrated, quite frankly. We started the budget process much earlier this year. So we've started engaging with our alders as early as April. We've had community town halls all over the city of Chicago over the past year, talking directly to residents, coming on this show, Ask the Mayor, to hear directly from people what they want in a budget. This budget ultimately protects working people. It doesn't raise property taxes. We don't extend or expand garbage fees. Same thing with grocery taxes, even though 600 municipalities have decided to carry on this tax that has been around for 30 years. We've decided we're not going to do that. We're going to challenge the ultra rich in this city, particularly our large corporations, to pay their fair share in taxes. By doing that, we make the critical investments to continue to build the safest, most affordable big city in America. Anytime we get a chance to debate that, I'm always willing to do it. So this is not a failure. This is more of a response to our proposal. And as of date, whether it's that particular alderman that you're referring to, we have not seen anything of substance that has been returned to us for us to debate.
Well, to that end, I mean, you were rather defiant after the Finance Committee voted down your spending plan, calling on alders to just basically generate their own ideas. Could that set an unprecedented situation here in Chicago where the mayor presents a budget and then city council essentially presents its own budget?
That's not unprecedented. That's how negotiations happen. That has been the scenario for decades in this city. They're legislators. They can make amendments to a budget. I've been a legislator as a Cook County Commissioner. I've made amendments to the budget. That's actually how the democratic process works. So this is not an unprecedented element. What we have seen, though, where you have parts of a budget being voted on versus the entire budget. Now, that is different. So what we've said from the very beginning, there are a number of ideas that are worth debating. In fact, through our subcommittee for revenue, 50 ideas have been presented. Not one of those ideas have been returned back to us as a way to continue this conversation. Look, it's going to come down to something very basic and simple for me. We're either going to challenge the large corporations to put more skin in the game, and we're talking about less than 2% over the overall budget. It's about 1.6% of the overall budget. We're talking $100 million. We're either going to ask those large corporations to put more skin in the game, or we're going to balance the budget off the backs of working people through regressive taxes or layoffs. Both of those lines I've drawn in the sand.
Yeah, you mentioned already that you're not going to consider increasing that $9.50 a month garbage fee, the 1% grocery tax, a property tax, or cuts to police and fire. Tell us why those ideas are off the table.
Well, look, we've made tremendous strides in terms of driving violence down on the city of Chicago. This is not a time to pat ourselves on the back. This is a time for us to double down on our efforts to do the work that's actually working. Look, I've said from the very beginning, after having the safest summer in 60 years, clearly our full force of government approach is moving us in the right direction. More work to be done, but it's policing and youth employment. It's policing and mental and behavioral health care services. It's policing and our CVI workers, our community violence intervention workers, who have been justice involved. They've changed their lives around. Now they're in the very communities that they used to wreak havoc in, and they're providing necessary support and resources for those families who are desperately in need of that type of support. Mm-hmm. It's also about ensuring that we're building more affordable homes. And so that's why it's off the table. If people believe that we should cut and lay off police officers, they're wrong. If people believe that we should cut services, then they haven't spent time talking to the people of this city, because I have not run into one constituent that has said to me, we should cut services and lay people off. In fact, they say the opposite. We should invest more in our communities, because that's what safe cities do.
Ahead of Monday's vote, you made a tweak to your proposal for what's become a big sticking point here, the corporate head tax. You raised the number of employees from 100 to 200 for a business to pay $21 per head. Then the proposal went back to 100 employees before Monday. Are further changes in the works to this corporate head tax, because your colleagues just aren't getting behind it?
Well, I've always said that my values, I don't negotiate. We do work through the details of those values. My values are very clear. We're going to protect working people. These corporations who just received the largest tax break from the Trump administration, they don't need anyone else defending them. What I've said repeatedly, if there are ways in which we can adjust our proposal so that potential unintended consequences don't materialize, then I'm open to that. And so we have come up with a formation that holds harmless certain industries that have a high volume of employees, but their margin, if you will, for productivity is not as wide. We're talking about grocery stores, restaurants. And so that's the type of negotiation that I'm accustomed to. Just simply saying no, because you just fundamentally opposed my approach towards governance, then it's really hard to take you seriously. If individuals are interested in really having a substantive conversation around how we balance a budget and we don't do it off the backs of working people, I'm always amenable to those conversations.
Mm-hmm. But this back and forth, do we have time for all of this? Mayor Johnson, you got to pass this budget by December 31st.
We do. So I'm asking Alders to continue to provide ideas, and if they do, we'll look at them.
Let's jump to the phone lines and hear from Roberto in Edgewater. Hi, Roberto. What's your question for the mayor?
Hi, Sasha. Good morning, Mayor Johnson. So there has been a lot of discussion surrounding the Ernst & Young report, and certain people have implied or suggested that you did not include any of the recommendations or included very little. So my question for you is, what items from the Ernst & Young report was included in your budget, and are there two or three additional items that you would consider to include in your budget?
Thank you for that question. So as you may know, Roberto, I put forth an executive order calling for this groupthink. So the first mayor in the history of Chicago to bring all industries together to find ways in which we can modernize government, because as it stands today, it's antiquated. And of the recommendations that came from a report, that, by the way, some of the individuals who are calling for me to do more from this report actually opposed me doing the report in the first place, right? I just want to lay out the hypocrisy here. We have instituted in this budget 50% of the recommendations, and that's just about cost savings. Everything from fleet management to procurement to the consolidation and the selling of city buildings, real estate that we just don't use anymore, or we don't need the space. But we also instituted recommendations, not just for cost savings, but for revenue generation. Things as simple as making sure that CPD is being reimbursed for services that they provide for private functions or events. That hasn't happened. And we're going to make sure that we receive those, not just cost savings, but revenue generating ideas. And so in this year's budget, we find savings roughly around $80 million to $100 million. Those savings will continue to, accrue over the next 10 years that will save the city roughly $600 million, if not more. Same thing with the revenue generating ideas. And so again, the cost savings from our fleet management to our real estate to procurement to how we modernize our police department, these are recommendations that came right from the executive order that I put forward, and there's also some cost savings in terms of management. with staffing as well, because you had just configurations that just didn't make any sense. So all of these things take time. You know, there's not one report that you can deliver everything in one budget, but we do take over 50% of the recommendations to save the taxpayers' dollars.
What are some of the other things that you would consider? Just following up on Roberto's question.
Yeah, I mean, the full report is available. There are still some more things that we can do around healthcare costs. Mm-hmm. There are some savings there that we're going to have some conversations with our workforce, right? I mean, the healthcare costs have gone up astronomically for everyone. And there are certain elements of these benefits that just are not sustainable for city government.
Yeah, I think some of the pushback that you alluded to there was just because this costs so much. This report, it cost taxpayers $3 million.
It cost taxpayers $3 million, of which we found $100 million of savings. So the question is should be asked to those individuals who are pushing back, was it worth the $3 million if it's going to save us upwards of $1 billion over the next 10 years? I say absolutely yes.
All right, let's get back into this budget here. Mm-hmm. And specifically the corporate head tax, because I do want to be clear. If you think that there's a budget proposal involving some version of a corporate head tax that actually can pass the city council.
Yes. Yes.
What would that look like?
What it looks like today, quite frankly. And that's why we're still, because here's the thing. There has been no alternative that's been presented to me. You know, I think it's short-sighted for an entire body to just simply say no.
Mm. Well, they're saying businesses are going to leave town.
Well, they also say that to Richard J. Daley when he instituted it in 1973. Look, when Richard J. Daley instituted this tax on corporations, it was for corporations who had 15 or more employees, and it was $4 per employee. And Edward Doleac led the charge to push back against Richard J. Daley that this would cause businesses to leave and the city will never develop. Well, though there are some computers in my way, the view outside of these studios, it is evident that what Edward Doleac argued was not true, right? The city of Chicago is the epicenter of the world. It's the global capital of the world. And in fact, when the tax was eliminated by the Emanuel administration, property taxes went up 3 years in a row over $500 million. And you know who did leave? Working people in this city. There's no empirical evidence that suggests that taxes or taxing on corporations impact job creation. There's just no empirical evidence of that. So now people are either speculative or being hyperbolic. And so what I've said repeatedly is that corporations, as well as CEOs who run them and working people, you know what their top issue is? It's community safety. The best way to develop a city is to build a safer city. What harms business, what harms neighborhoods is when there is abject poverty and subsequently crime flows. And so when corporations and leaders come to me and they say, the best way to help grow our business, Mayor Johnson, is to make it easier to do business with Chicago, which we've done with the Cut the Tape initiative, where operations that have taken 9 to 12 months to complete, we're now getting it done in less than a month. They've also said, not just cut the tape, but build a safer city. And we literally had two things: the safest summer in 60 years, and we had the most productive summer in terms of economic development ever in the history of Chicago. That's why this community safety surcharge, it's not a fungible set of revenue. It goes strictly to the areas of community safety and need. It's a fund that will be the largest city fund for community safety in any city in America. It's going to make sure that our young people are supported. It's going to make sure that the mental health of our police officers is supported. It's going to make sure that our CVI program continues to grow. And here's the other thing. It's actually going towards gender-based and domestic violence survivors, where there's been an uptick in domestic and gender-based violence. So these resources, we're talking about less than 2% of the corporate fund, a $6 billion corporate fund. We're talking about $100 million, which is 1.6% of the overall budget. This is not even a substantial number in terms of the overall budget, but it is significant and substantial when it comes to what that number is going to go towards, and that's building the safest, most affordable big city in America.
Let's go back to the phones, Mayor Johnson, and talk with Marjorie in Westtown. Hi, Marjorie. Good morning. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you for being here, Mayor Johnson.
You're welcome.
My question is about the garbage fee, and my understanding is that you are opposed to raising that. And I wanted to hear your comments about that, because my understanding is that Chicago's fees are much lower than other cities and industry standards. And I'm very concerned about environmental issues, and I think we need to do a better job of managing our waste systems, particularly recycling and composting, although I know we've made some progress. And if we do a better job of managing our waste instead of sending it to landfills where it produces methane, we will be helping with our greenhouse gas systems or production and the issue of climate change. And I know that it is an issue for landlords. I am a landlord. I'm a retired person who depends on the income of my four-unit building to live.
Marjorie, I want to get you an answer to that question. So Marjorie's wondering, why are you against these garbage fees?
Well, thank you, Marjorie, for the question. And she's right. It's not just garbage fees. It's fees in general that for a major city, our fee structure has not kept up with inflation. And so it's one of the things within our police department that we're modernizing, in particular around how the police department is reimbursed for services that it provides. For many of these community functions or private functions, police officers, essentially, we were giving that time and the city was assuming the entire cost. In this budget, Marjorie, there are a number of fees that we do adjust to inflation, right? That also came out of the Ernst & Young report. So we're doing that, and over time we'll do more. The reason why I believe raising the garbage fee at this moment is just not feasible is because of the cuts that are coming from the federal government in particular. Placing greater or more significant burden on working class people, this is just not the time to ask working people to commit more, particularly at a time in which these big corporations are getting more than they've ever had. They literally have received the greatest and the most significant tax breaks in the history of America. Donald Trump issued the largest upward transfer of wealth into the hands of the ultra rich more than any other time in America's history. And so when you couple that with the cuts that are coming from the federal government and the fact that corporations have the ability to afford, again, to contribute 1.6% of the $6 billion budget, I think it's a responsible thing to do. And then finally, you're absolutely right about our response to environmental justice. This is something that is absolutely of great importance to my wife, the First Lady. We just celebrated another milestone, 68,000 trees that we've planted. As you know, Marjorie, that helps with water mitigation and particularly prevent flooding. It provides shade. It cools neighborhoods down. It saves us in terms of our utility bills as well. And then same thing with composting. Thank you for recognizing that we're doing a much better job there. We're actually investing in corporations and communities that are actually doing that work. And then finally, we're in phase two of the reinstitution of the Department of the Environment. As you know, it was taken away from two administrations ago. Mm-hmm. We've restored it. And so that work is ongoing, and working class people deserve a break. I think a break that should be at least on par with the break that corporations receive.
I do want to reiterate, though, that 1% grocery tax that's also off the table, it would raise $80 million. So why?
Well, again, you know, we just saw the Trump administration take away food from people, right? The SNAP benefits that were cut off. I've spent a great deal of my time helping families who are literally standing in lines waiting for food and toilet paper. And you're right, this grocery tax has been collected for 30 years. It's been around for 30 years. 600 municipalities have decided to do it. I just don't believe at this time when SNAP benefits are being cut from families. The Greater Chicago Food Depository, shout out to them. We were just with Bishop Gunn on the west side of Chicago, who runs a food pantry. I was at the Salvation Army yesterday. We were with Pastor Amber Crombie on the west side. Again, long lines of people who are just looking and needing food. They've all noticed that those lines have grown, and there are more people looking and needing food assistance.
Right.
And so a grocery collection tax at this time, I just don't believe is responsible.
Let's hear from Vicki in South Shore. Hi, Vicki. What's your question for the mayor?
Hi. Good morning, and thank you for allowing me this opportunity. My name is Vicki Willis, and I'm a business owner of Zoe's Organic Herbal Blends. I'm located here in South Shore. I'm at 2238 East 71st Street. And so my question is, like, what steps is your administration taking to ensure that small businesses like mine, because I only have two employees, you know, we're routinely excluded from some of the existing grant programs so that we can also receive, or I can receive, equitable access to the funding and support that I know that the, I know there's an office downtown, the business office downtown would help us, but we're often overlooked, especially those of us over east. So that's my question, and thank you.
Thank you, Vicki, for being committed to building business in the community. So, Vicki, if you leave your information with one of the producers, I'll have my deputy mayor for economic and neighborhood development call you, or commissioner for BACP. So I put forth, Vicki, a $1.25 billion economic bond investment for housing and small businesses. It's the largest investment for economic development in the history of Chicago for the very reason that you described. For too many of our small businesses, they haven't had access to some of these other program. So we created one designed just for you, Vicki. And so if you leave your information, I'll have somebody call you. And we're always looking forward to hanging out over East.
Sources and Methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
Let's talk here about this reliance on a $1 billion surplus from TIFs, tax increment financing districts. Mm-hmm. More than half of that money, $552 million, is slated for the Chicago Public Schools. Can you tell us what that's going to be used for?
Yeah, thank you for that question. We did release the largest TIF surplus in the history of the city of Chicago, $1 billion, of which roughly $230 million would return right back to the city of Chicago, the County of Cook, water reclamation, our parks, our libraries, and of course, including our public schools. So again, we just saw the president strip away nearly almost $20 million away from our public schools for our Black Student Success Program, right? So we're going to make sure that we protect that program. It's important. About anywhere from 30 to 35% of our students now have IEPs, right? So we're going to make sure that there's support for our special education services as well. Mm-hmm. As you know, Safe Passage is something that's even more critical today, particularly at a time in which the Trump administration is terrorizing cities across America with federal agents. And so Safe Passage dollars are something that's important to me. But it's going to go to making sure that we don't have mid-year layoffs either. right? Because, you know, without this surplus, you know, we're talking as many as 6,000 to 7,000 employees who wouldn't have jobs. Now, the good thing about this surplus is that what we've seen over the course of the last 2 years, these TIF districts replenish at an extreme pace now. So this TIF surplus now that we're talking about, these same spaces will be replenished by $1.4 billion going right back into those areas. So it's going to make sure that our public education system is supported. Now, ultimately, as I've said repeatedly, we're going to continue to work with the General Assembly, the state of Illinois. We know that the state of Illinois passed a law basically commissioning themselves to fully fund our public schools across the state of Illinois. $1.6 billion for the city of Chicago and the remaining for the rest of the state, $2.3 billion, something like that. And we're going to continue to work that our school district is fully funded. In the meantime, I'm not going to allow our public education system to lay people off, to not invest in special education, to not invest in the success of Black students at a time in which we just saw the Trump administration literally work to deprofessionalize the very entities or professions that provide so much love and care for our students.
Yeah. So Wednesday, you said at a town hall that the city council has two options. They can tax the rich or tax working class people. And working class people already are being hit right now, right? So according to the report from Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas's office, the average residential property tax bill in Chicago rose 16.7%. Some of the hardest hit, as we've seen, were homeowners in Black and Latino communities on the South and West sides. Some are blaming you for this Cook County property tax hike. I know that you met with some folks.
So I'm responsible for Cook County government too now, apparently.
I saw
okay.
A lot of the streets are talking.
All right, so
this
the city
is your opportunity
of Chicago
to clear
is now
it up.
Responsible for Cook County's decisions. That just doesn't make any sense.
Well, clear right? it up. I know that you met
yeah,
with folks.
I mean,
folks,
look,
right?
I don't assess property. That's not what I do. That's not what the city does. The assessment is done by Cook County assessor. Mm-hmm. And the way this assessment has been carried out, there's been a shift in a cost burden placed on communities that I live in.
Right.
Right? My property taxes went up too. Right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's why I'm not raising property taxes. As the mayor of Chicago, I'm not raising them. And to Cook County Board President Toni Preckwinkle's credit, she hasn't raised property taxes either.
So when you met with folks yesterday in some of those neighborhoods, what did you tell them?
Well, first of all, I listened primarily, right? So I spent some time in Auburn, Gresham. I was in my very own neighborhood on the west side in Austin, and families showed me their property tax bills. And what I said was, we need a budget in Chicago that protects working people. And they agree. They agree that corporations have to put more skin in the game. I don't ever run into working class people in this city, police officers, firefighters, bus and train operators, child care workers, which we include $7 million in this budget to raise the wages of child care workers so that we can continue to have more slots for working people to be able to have child care support. And none of these working class people ever come to me and say, Mayor Johnson, you know, we want our taxes raised. They say the opposite. They want me to find ways in which we can support their needs and demands, mm-hmm. but also they challenge the corporations to pay their fair share. And look, it really does come down to a couple of options. We're either going to generate 1.6% of a $6 billion budget. We're talking $100 million. Property taxes went up in our neighborhoods by two times that amount. The shift from downtown to almost $300 million, right? And so property taxes have gone up $300 million as a whole within residents or communities in the city of Chicago, if not more. And we're asking for $100 million, which is less than half than what the tax burden has been placed on working class people. This is a just budget. Let me just make this absolutely clear. You're either going to cut services and lay people off or raise property taxes on those same very people, or we're going to ask corporations to pay less than 0.36% of their overall payroll. What are we even debating right now, quite frankly? Less than a percentage point of the overall payroll of these large corporations, which, by the way, it's only 3% of them. 97% of them will be exempt from this. We're talking about businesses that are primarily like Vicky's. 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 employees. These individuals that have more than 100 employees receive the greatest tax break in the history of America. and you're debating whether or not we should ask them to contribute 1.6% of a $6 billion corporate fund? The option is clear. We challenge the ultra-rich and these large corporations, or we balance the budget off the backs of working people. And I have drawn a line. As someone who was raised in a working-class family, when the ends didn't always meet, my father worked every day, sometimes two jobs. He took on other assignments to make the ends meet. And he had to make a decision between paying our mortgage or paying my college tuition, paying for my mother's medicine, because when he lost his job, he lost his health care, which ultimately led to the demise of my mother.
Right.
And these are the decisions that people are making every single day. We have more people standing in lines for food. They're standing in lines for clothing. They're standing in lines for toiletries. And these corporations can't put in 0.36% of their payroll budget, their overall payroll budget. It's unconscionable. We have a decision to make. We're either going to protect working people or we're going to protect the very entities that are being protected by Donald Trump. I choose to protect the people who make this city run every single day, and that's working people.
Amber in Humboldt Park wants to stick with this property tax topic here. Welcome to the show, Amber. What's your question?
Hi, Sasha. Hi, Mayor Johnson.
Hi.
Yes, I'm just asking why my property tax index number was not found, and then how come the city won't return my calls? I've been trying to get my homeowner's exemption, and then my uncle lives with me half of the month and then spent his time in half the time in Michigan, and he and I own our property together, and I was trying to get the senior exemption as well, but I'm unable to get any response or any callback from the assessor's office nor email, and I've been trying since the beginning of the year, and I can't afford to pay my property tax with out those exemptions, and I'm struggling to get a hold of anybody in the office.
Yeah, thank you for that question. And again, you know, this is what motivates and provokes my heart. It's families like yours. And that's why I'm not raising property taxes in my budget. And so you've tried to county assessor. Here's what I would recommend. Call your county commissioner. If you're in Humboldt Park, your county commissioner is either Vasquez or Stamps. If you look either of them up, their numbers are available. Or if you want to hold on, I will have one of my staff members find out who your Cook County commissioner is, and we'll make sure that you get connected with them so that you can take advantage of those exemptions.
Thank you for your call, Amber. All right, so I want to get to a few callers in a row. So let's give some quicker responses to these folks because I want to squeeze more people in.
I hear you, Sasha. I'm just trying to be as thorough as possible for the people of the city.
I got you. All right, so up next is Patrick in East Dundee. Hey, Patrick, he's got budget ideas.
Okay.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, budget ideas. Looking at other countries now, they, you know, do their fines for anything from speeding tickets to, you know, criminal misdemeanors, anything like that, anything the city handles. Has there ever been talks about, you know, you're talking about working class versus the ultra rich, progressive fines that are used in like countries like Finland?
Yep.
If you have, you know, income higher, you pay more fines.
Yeah, we have thought about it. In fact, you know, this is a challenge when I mentioned earlier of the antiquated system that we do, that we're working to modernize. And I do believe that there is a pathway in which, you know, income could be a determinant and how fines are administered.
Thank you, Patrick. Let's jump now to—
Is that quick enough?
Yes. That was so quick, I wasn't ready. Carmen's up next in the West Loop. Hey, Carmen. Good morning.
Good morning, WBZ, Mayor Brandon Johnson. I wanted to ask you and suggest, on behalf of all Chicagoans and the Chicago business community, I would like to offer a suggestion to increase revenue for Chicago. Will you consider taxing out-of-state residents for working in Chicago instead of having a corporate tax? Why? As the old saying goes, you don't bite the hand that feeds you. As you know, Citadel has left. I believe the Deer Company has left. Many companies have taken thousands of jobs with them. When thousands of people leave the city of Chicago for other states, that's going to increase taxes for all Chicagoans and for all the majority of the state. So will you consider a income tax, like maybe in the form of a toll Chicago tax, when you enter the city of Chicago from, let's say, states like Indiana or Wisconsin, that's how you can capture a lot of income. And
I think we got the gist, Carmen. Go ahead, Mayor Johnson.
Yeah, so look, there's home rule authority that limits some of the taxes that I can institute. The vast majority of taxation is really at the hands of the state. And so that would require the state to provide us with local authority to be able to do that. And there are a number, Carmen, of ideas that we have taken to this, to Springfield, that if they're not willing to institute it, that I'm willing to do it and bring it before the voters. You know, as far as, you know, again, that specific tax or an income tax here, I believe that we would have to look and consider how we can provide relief on property taxes as well. You know, but you know, this notion that thousands of people are going to leave, there's greater indication, Carmen, that by raising property taxes, that's when we have seen the decline of population. So there's no empirical evidence that suggests otherwise. And I am open to ideas that really would require state authority to provide the city of Chicago and municipalities to be able to generate revenue. And then we can provide some relief on working people. So if you stay with me, continue to work with me, that is something that we are moving towards.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Mayor. Here's Weston in River North. Hi, Weston. What's your question for the mayor?
Hello. Hi, Mayor Johnson. I have just a quick question regarding the new casino that's being built. I'm watching it go up. Unfortunately, I'm also watching an increased traffic pattern in my neighborhood, and I've called my alderman, and he can't seem to give me any kind of answers for in lanes or out lanes that will be going specifically to the casino, which to me would be a no-brainer in terms of having built, because people aren't going to wait to want to go to get to a casino in traffic. And it's going to increase traffic in a neighborhood that's already having traffic issues.
Yeah, that's a that's a great question. If you leave your information, I'll have a person get back with you, because this is a longer response. But what I will say is that I did have a conversation with ownership. They are moving as quickly as they possibly can. And it looks like we're going to be able to make the schedule for the most part with this casino being brought online. And we had a specific conversation about accessibility, because to your point, if I could just be very honest here, the population that's most likeliest to use this casino, I think we all kind of know who is the kind of the standard traditional user of casinos. They're not going to want to wait, and they'll find other places to go. And so we are working to make it as convenient as possible, so that those individuals who are in their retired state of life, that they can have an easier pathway coming in and out of the city of Chicago. But leave your information. We'll get you a thorough response.
Thanks, Mayor Johnson.
You're welcome.
A 26-year-old woman is in critical condition. This is after being set on fire on the Blue Line this week. We also saw a separate story, a mother and son physically attacked by a large group of school children. This was on the far south side in Trumbull Park. You wrote on X following that incident. You know, you talked about how the city, both community members and city officials, have to come together to support that family. How do you grapple with these kinds of realities, Mayor Johnson, where you've got, on one hand, crime is down, right? You said it yourself earlier. But two, these kinds of incidents are still happening.
Yeah.
Does it feel as though we're giving the White House more talking points about Chicago?
Well, look, there's nothing you can do about the White House at this point. I mean, this you're talking about a deranged, demented administration. So let's just, you know, focus on what you've elevated. Both horrific crimes. And look, I've seen quite a bit growing up. I've seen a lot even as mayor of Chicago. I don't think I've ever experienced anything as gruesome as those two incidents. Right. One of which is being charged with, at the federal level. That's how gruesome it was. And there was a real failure in our criminal justice system and our mental health institutions, because that individual should not have been on the streets of Chicago. And
as a result, people don't feel safe riding the CTA.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why, if we go even further, is why I've worked so hard to make sure that we're fully funding our transportation system so that we can have safety measures within our public transportation system so that incidents like that don't happen, but I want to make sure that this is clear. This is extremely isolated, right? And you know, I don't want people to lose sight of that, as horrific and as graphic as it was. And yet we know that a number of people have had bad experiences on our public transportation system, despite the fact that ridership is up. What we're doing now and today is making sure that homelessness services are coupled with public safety law enforcement measures, that law enforcement measures are coupled with mental health services. All of it has to work together. And I know that, you know, that work is being done now. And as we look towards the full funding of our public transportation system that allows for stronger protective measures to be in place, that's what our goal and has always been. And then
when you see something like that happen, though, does it feel like you have to do more to even more to improve our safety on buses and trains?
Yes.
People are terrified.
Well,
it's a one-off incident.
Listen, I don't think it's going to, I don't think it changes my motivation, right? The motivation doesn't change because we see experiences like this. Do I believe and want us to do more? Of course. Of course I do. And that's why I'm doing more, right? It's why we fought so hard for the funding to come to the city of Chicago, right? Because all of this requires investments. It's not just about accountability. This is about prevention. And the more we can do on the front end, that ensures that people are safe. Look, I have a family. Before I was mayor, I used to take public transportation all the time.
I have a daughter who rides it every single
day.
So
you understand the fear and the trepidation that people have. And, you know, it's why this moment is so critical when we talk about making sure that we're investing in our public institutions. That's what's required here. Like, there's no shortcut to this. We're either going to invest in our public systems and our institutions, or we're not. And that's why I've been so dogged about ensuring that those investments exist. People want services, but I'm dealing with a city council right now, as we've been discussing, that want me to cut services, right? They want me to lay off police officers, because that's the only way in which you're going to be able to get to the type of savings that they're talking about, is to cut personnel. While you're talking about your daughter, I'm talking about my family and other families out there. This is why I'm working so hard to prevent this city council from cutting services. And same thing with the family that, you know, experienced this violent, brutal act. We use the full force of government to put our arms around this family. And housing, education, support for their housing, mental health support, but we also have to make sure that the individuals who are responsible, that we hold them accountable. But we also have to make sure that those who are held accountable, that they also get the treatment that they need, because it is clear to engage in that type of act of violence, there's something else going on there that we have to address.
Ryan in Skokie has been waiting. Hi, Ryan. What's your question for the mayor?
Good morning. I just want to say that Chicago has an opportunity of a lifetime to create a not a traffic congestion tax, but a tax where people who want to go into Chicago are paid an hourly wage. And the reason I'm saying this is, if you look at the layout of Chicago, four interstates converge into the loop. One of them is Western. One of them is Edens, then you got the Kennedy, then you got the Eisenhower, and then you got Stevenson. If you charge three roads, turn them into nonstop tollways, Western, Ashland, and Cicero, and make Cicero the cheapest, Western the second higher, and then Ashland the highest, you divert traffic in one direction, westward. L.A. and New York could only dream of this layout. You're talking tens of billions of dollars a year in revenue. And people who complain about congestion tax cannot complain, because the tax they choose to be taxed on is the time they choose to waste in the loop traffic.
All right. Let's broaden that question a little bit. So, Mayor, tell me what you think about charging people to come downtown, like some form of congestion or traffic tax.
Well, we already have a congestion structure. That rate is going to stay the same. You know, we expanded it just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, we will have to look at traffic patterns a little closer these days, because here's the thing. Our population is growing. Despite what people are saying, we had 22,000 more people move into our city. Again, top relocator for corporate headquarters. You know, we had the most busiest summer ever. Our airport is a major connector to international flights. And, you know, I don't think we have celebrated this enough, But for the first time in the history of Chicago, we're going to have New Year's Eve countdown right here in Chicago. So when we move off from the East Coast to New York, we're going to have the countdown with Disney Productions, ABC Productions right here in the Midwest here in the city of Chicago. That's 30 million people who will get a better view of our city. We saw this during the DNC. So I don't disagree with the caller in that there's going to be more attention in our city, and we're driving that attention. It's a matter of, you know, working collectively with City Council, the state of Illinois, and all of our partners to ensure that that structure makes sense for people.
Mm-hmm. Here's Mario now in the West Side. Hi, Mario. What's your question?
Hi. How are you? First, I'd like to say much respect, Mayor, on holding your ground, you know, keeping the minorities and the youth. Your programs are working no matter what anybody says. Now, my second thing is, do we have a tax on the massive comrades that's going on online from places like Amazon, TikTok, Facebook? A tax on that's killing the mortar stores.
Yeah, it's a great question, Mario. Thank you for the encouragement. So I've long supported what is called a digital ad tax, right? I mean, because our economy is becoming more digitized. I think Mario is absolutely right. If we don't shift our economy or our government to be able to follow where our economy is going, we're going to continue to lose out on those programs that are technically really still underfunded, right? And so thank you for that recognition. So whether it's a digital ad tax, which has to happen in Springfield, and I support it, and I've supported it for some time, even at the time when I was a Cook County commissioner, as well as our smart tax, our social media amusement responsibility tax. It's a tax on these large big tech companies, over 100,000 users. It's not a tax on the actual user. Social media is still free, but this is a tax on these big tech companies that essentially sell our data and make profit off of their advertisement, essentially billions of dollars. This is a brand new tax that we're going to initiate.
But couldn't it cost us more?
How?
Well, I mean, taxpayers?
No. No, the tax is actually on the company, the corporation, over 100,000 users who have footprint in the city of Chicago. So they make their money off of advertisement, billions of dollars, right?
Okay. And so that, but if it faces challenges, like perhaps legal challenges.
Yeah, it will face challenges. That's why it's not being used to balance my budget. But I think to Mario's point, if we don't shift government to go towards the economy, the programs that he's talking about won't exist. And so that's where our economy is going, is becoming more and more digitized, and we have to capture the revenue in those spaces. We're talking about these tech companies, all of whom stood next to Donald Trump on Inauguration Day. And that's why, you know, this budget is designed to protect working people, not the people that Donald Trump is protecting. And so this smart tax is going to go strictly towards investing in our mental and behavioral health care services, which is something else that people want me to expand, and I will. And so these dollars will still be collected. And once we go through the legal challenges and the process, which we're confident that we're going to prevail, mm-hmm. now we have dedicated revenue that goes towards services that a mayor by themselves cannot just unilaterally take away.
You need 26 votes mm-hmm. to pass this budget.
Well, technically 25.
On Monday in committee, you had 10. Are you closer to the 25 today?
Yeah, we are.
Than you were at the start of the week?
Yes, we are.
So you're confident that we'll pass this before the deadline? Because like we're coming down to the wire like we did last year.
Just like last year. We'll get it done. Look, we've had these type of, tensions before. When Mayor Harold Washington was in office, you had very similar tensions. We got through it then, and we'll get through it now.
You know, we're almost out of time. I didn't even get to dig into the police misconduct parts of you know, your budget, because the proposal really, if I boil it down, it includes just a little over $80 million for police settlements. And in recent years, when we think about it, settlements have cost so much more than that. So I'm curious, why not budget more instead of your proposal was to take out a loan?
Well, one of the things that we had to do was make sure that we put measures in place to prevent these type of egregious acts from happening. We have a strong leader at the top of my police department, mm-hmm. Superintendent Snelling. We have put forth within this ordinance where we have created essentially a warning system so that if a commander sees a particular police officer that has been accused of misconduct, we have early warning signs to be able to provide support for that officer or to take other means to ensure that we don't have an officer out there that is, you know, abusing their power. We've capped overtime, and so we've used the actual real number. Mm-hmm. And if they want to go beyond that number, of course, they'll have to go before city council. We are civilianizing our police force. There are many different cost savings that we've put forward, you know, and the goal ultimately is to prevent this type of misconduct from happening.
That's Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. Thank you so much. That's it. That was a lot. Thanks so much for making time. We'll see you next month. Thanks for listening to In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. Join me here every weekday for in-depth coverage of Chicago news and culture. Let's talk again soon.